Well, I think it's pretty safe to say that we all like feeling satisfied, don't we? And it's a good feeling when we are. I've got to say I'm feeling pretty satisfied after eating that awesome pasta. But, you know, satisfaction, it's not always easy to find, is it? I was talking about this with my sister-in-law, Wendy, the other day. And she told me that she was having... Oh, sorry, that's a picture of... that's Wendy with my little daughter, Eve. That was a couple of years ago, so Eve is a bit bigger than that now. But that's my sister-in-law, Wendy. And Wendy was telling me, when we're having this conversation, that she's actually been chatting with some of her friends lately. And her friends had been telling her that they'd got to a point in their lives where they realised they'd ticked all the boxes. They'd reached a good level in their careers. They'd got married and bought a house. And they'd had several children. Sounds pretty ideal, doesn't it? You'd think life for them would be great. So I was surprised when Wendy told me that her friends didn't actually feel that way. As they observed their lives, they found them kind of wanting. Life felt mediocre, and they felt themselves asking, is this it? Is this as good as it gets? Life just didn't feel truly satisfying. Well, a journalist from the Sydney Morning Herald came to the same conclusion about Aussie culture. He says this, it's time for a funeral. The laid-back Aussie is dead. Look around, the evidence is everywhere. In the normal course of life, the daily frustrations, such as tensions at work, job insecurity, the gridlock traffic, the mountainous mortgage, all lead to stress and feelings of dissatisfaction. Australians just don't seem that happy anymore. But it seems when it comes to feeling dissatisfied, it's actually us women who really are the high achievers. Let's have a look at some statistics. What percentage of us, of Aussie women, do you think, and this is going to come up, I want you guys to maybe shout it out to me, what percentage of Aussie women do you think are dissatisfied in their work? Any ideas? Okay. It's actually 66%, apparently, of Australian women say that they're dissatisfied in their work. And apparently a lot of the women who were surveyed, so they felt that in their work they were stressed and over-pressured for time. Okay, here's another one. What percentage of women are unsatisfied with the way that we look? Bit higher? Pretty high? It's actually 90% of women. That table, it sounds like you got it right at the back there. 90% of Australian women report that they're unsatisfied with the way that they look. Okay, here's another one. What about our sex lives? What percentage of women reported that they were unhappy with this aspect of their lives? It's 64% of Australian women reported that they're unsatisfied with their sex life. It's actually not looking that good, is it? So what does this all mean? Can we ever feel truly satisfied? Are we just sort of hardwired to feel that things could always be that bit better? That my life just isn't quite as good as it could be? If I wasn't so busy and life wasn't so pressured, if my kids listened to me more and my husband didn't work such long hours, if I didn't feel so lonely and the house wasn't so messy all the time, if my stomach wasn't quite so flabby, life would just be better. I'd feel more satisfied and more content. Well, to be honest, I found this talk pretty hard to write because there are parts of my life that I feel unsatisfied with. You know, I'm really good at looking sideways and seeing what others have got and what I don't have. But as I was writing this talk, I found that I was learning some new things and being stretched and challenged in new ways. Because you see, the part of the Bible that we're about to look at tonight offers some surprising answers to these big questions of life. The bit of the Bible that we're going to have a look at, it's actually a conversation that Jesus had with a large group of people. Let me paint you a bit of a picture about what's been going on. So there's a huge crowd of people who have been sitting on a hill listening to Jesus for most of the day. And as the afternoon wears on, there's a few growling stomachs in the group. The people are getting hungry. They're out in the country, they're not near any shops, and they can't just pop down to Woolies to pick up a barbecued chicken. So Jesus does something amazing. There's one little boy, we're told, in the crowd who was smart enough to bring a packed lunch. He probably wasn't my son if he's got his own packed lunch. He has five small pieces of bread and two small fish. So Jesus takes the food and he starts to divide it up. And there ends up being enough food for 5,000 people to eat. Jesus performs a miracle. And after Jesus leaves, the crowd go looking for him. And this leads to an interesting conversation between them and Jesus. And I'm going to read it for us now. It should come up on the screen for you too. So it's from the book of John, starting in chapter 6. When they found him on the other side of the lake, they asked him, "Rabbi, when did you get here?" Jesus answered, "I tell you the truth. You were looking for me, not because you saw miraculous signs, but because you ate the loaves and had your fill. Do not work for food that spoils, but for food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you. On him God the Father has placed his seal of approval." Then they asked him, "What must we do the works God requires?" Jesus answered, "The work of God is this, to believe in the one he has sent." So they asked him, "What miraculous sign then will you give that we may see it and believe you? What will you do? Our forefathers ate the manna in the desert. As it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat." Jesus said to them, "I tell you the truth. It is not Moses who has given you the bread from heaven, but it is my Father who gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world." "Sir," they said, "from now on, give us this bread." Then Jesus declared, "I am the bread of life. He who comes to me will never go hungry, and he who believes in me will never be thirsty." It's interesting, isn't it? The people in the story are all feeling nicely satisfied after their meal. Their stomachs are full and they're pretty impressed with Jesus. But instead of basking in their admiration, he starts to challenge them. So Jesus says to them, "Do not work for food that spoils, but for food that endures to eternal life." So Jesus is saying to them, look, don't get excited because you got a free feed. He knows that tomorrow the leftover bread will be moldy, the fish will be smelly and covered in flies, and the people, they'll be hungry again. You see, he wants them to look beyond the immediate stuff around them. And you know, I reckon we're not that different from the people in the story, are we? Like them, we're hungry people, and there are plenty of things that we hunger for. A little while ago, I was reading an article on James Packer in The Good Weekend, and I found that as I was reading it, I was feeling kind of smug. As I read about the yacht that he bought himself for $50 million, I was thinking, I'm glad I'm not like him. I'm glad I don't spend crazy amounts of money on stuff. But as I thought about it, I realised I'm just the same as James Packer. I want more than what I've got. I often think if I had a nicer home with more bench space in my kitchen and someone to do my laundry for me, I'd be happier. It's easy for me to condemn him for being greedy and loving money. But you see, I'm hungry too. And I can be fooled into thinking that that little bit more will make my life better, when it's really stuff that won't last. It's food that spoils. Well, have you ever wanted something really, really badly and you start thinking that when you get your hands on it, life will just be good? Well, for months, I've got to confess, I was wanting these really nice oven mitts from David Jones. They were Donna Hay in eggshell blue, you know, the trendy colour. I'd seen them in the shop and every time I went past them, I thought, oh, they're so nice. And after a while, I thought, you know, I'm just going to go and buy them. And for a couple of weeks, I was hanging them on my oven. I just thought, this is fabulous. Looks great. But, you know, after a little while, they got stuff spilt on them and they kind of got burnt and they started looking pretty tatty. I'm going to show you. They kind of ended up, so you can see sort of my, you know, my burn there, and we've got a bit of brown stuff going on. It's, you know, I thought that when I got my hands on them, they were just what I wanted. But it just didn't end up as fulfilling as I thought it really would be. You see, often the things that we want and the things that we work so hard to get, they're actually not bad things. We want to feel happy. We want to have a good life with good relationships and fulfilling work. But the problem can be that we make these good things the ultimate thing. We think that these things will fill us, that they'll satisfy us deep down, but they end up leaving us hungry. They're actually food that spoils. So Jesus says, don't work for food that spoils, but for food that endures to eternal life. So Jesus challenges them and us to look beyond the material. He knows that material stuff doesn't really satisfy, that it doesn't last forever. And so he offers something else, spiritual food that will endure. I think for a lot of us, we do get that sense, don't we, that the material stuff doesn't really satisfy deep down. And we do see sometimes that some kind of spiritual food in life can be important. And there's a lot of people asking spiritual questions today. So how do I find spiritual fulfillment? How do I find this eternal food that will really endure, that will satisfy me and make me feel whole? Do I learn meditation? Do I go on a retreat? Do I say 10 Hail Marys? Well, you see, the people in the story were asking those same questions too. They ask Jesus this. They say, what must we do to do the work God requires? You see, Jesus is offering them spiritual food, eternal food, and they seem keen to find out, how do we get our hands on it? But what's interesting here is how they ask the question. They ask, what must we do? I guess they're just like the typical bloke, aren't they? I mean, they see there's a problem, and the first response is, how can we fix it? But, you know, as women, we can be a bit like that too, can't we? We can be very good at doing. When things don't feel right, we start making lists, we go on diets, we tidy up the house, we set goals. Sometimes we just try harder. But you see, the people in the story, their thinking is all wrong. They think that being fulfilled, that being satisfied, is all about what they can do. You can see it in their question, can't you? What must we do? Well, there are hundreds of ways to look for spiritual food, aren't there? And there's a lot on offer at the spiritual supermarket these days. You've only got to go down to Dimmicks and look in the self-help section, or go to the Mind, Body and Spiritual Festival, which is held in Sydney every year. There's a lot on offer. But when you think about it, there's one thing that all of these ways have in common. Their focus is about what I can do. So for some of us, that might just mean trying to live the best life you can, being kind to those around you, doing your best, because surely that's enough. If there's a God, surely that's what he'd require. My husband Clayton tells me that apparently when he was a little kid, he used to pray to God on Christmas Eve. He wanted to get heaps of presents, so he'd pray, promising to be good so he could get stuff. You see, when finding satisfaction is about what I can do, well, it kind of leaves us with two different outcomes. On one hand, if we're doing well by our own standards, if we think we're going all right, we can end up feeling secretly pretty pleased with ourselves. It can lead us to feeling arrogant, like when I was comparing myself to James Packer and thinking I was better than him. Or the other outcome, which is just the opposite. When we don't measure up to the things that we're supposed to do, we can end up feeling pretty guilty. Whenever I read stuff that tells me what I should do, I end up feeling like a bit of a loser. I'm supposed to drink more water. I'm supposed to get more exercise and eat foods that are high fiber and low GI. Before I've even finished reading the article, I'm just feeling like a failure. So how radically different are Jesus' words in verse 29? The people ask the question, what must we do? And he replies like this. He says, the work of God is this, to believe in the one he has sent. So he doesn't give them a five-step plan to spiritual satisfaction. He doesn't tell them to try harder or to live a better life. He doesn't want them to do anything. You see, Jesus tells us that the way to meet our deep spiritual hunger is to believe in him. He says that real, heartfelt satisfaction won't be found in the things that we can do. It won't be found by trying to improve my own life. It won't be found in making a sea change or fixing up my work-life balance. It won't be found in renovating my home or even in fixing up my relationships. Jesus is saying that our deepest hunger can only be satisfied in knowing him. That's what he's claiming. And it's actually not the last thing that he has to say about food either. He says this, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me will never go hungry, and he who believes in me will never be thirsty. That's a pretty weird claim, isn't it? Jesus is saying that he's the bread of life. For people in Jesus' time, bread was the ultimate staple food, the essential. It was the thing that kept them going. Jesus is saying that he is what we need for life. Well, I guess it all comes down to what we're made for. The Bible tells us that we're hardwired for a specific purpose, that we're built for a relationship with God, that we've been made lovingly, carefully, with a specific purpose in mind. And that purpose is to know God and to be known by him. So when we try to satisfy that hunger with other things, we can end up feeling empty and just wanting more. So Jesus is saying that there's more to life than just the here and now. We do live in a world, don't we, where things just aren't the way that they should be. We're all hungry and thirsty people who have tried to fill ourselves with everything but God. So when Jesus says that he's the bread of life, he's actually offering us himself. Jesus is the one who was sent by God to live like us in this hungry world and to die for us so that we could taste eternal life. So for me, knowing Jesus means that I can stop trying so hard to make myself happy. Things here don't last, and they won't fill me deep down. Knowing Jesus doesn't mean that I never struggle with things. I still fall into the trap of wanting stuff. But I do know that I won't find true satisfaction anywhere else but Jesus. And I can know that things will be okay, even when life is hard and disappointing. Because through him, I can know God personally and know that I'm loved by him. Not because of what I do, but because of what Jesus has done. Tasty food that really satisfies. Delicious food that endures to eternal life. It sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Thanks for listening.